And that's another thing I love about electric handpieces. And I heard it actually from several doctors. We all agreed that even if you don't have the best hand skills, but having a good handpiece that give you control, it will make your preparations better.
Welcome to Austin, Texas, and welcome to the Phil Klein Dental Podcast. So as practicing dentists, we all know the importance of a good handpiece. Whether you're using air or electric, whatever your favorite thing is, it's got to be precise. It's got to be comfortable in your hand. It's got to work reliably. And we have to maintenance it, because if we don't maintenance it, we're going to have issues with a rough ride when we're working with our handpiece. Now, today we're going to be talking to Dr. Anna Paholiuk. She's a big fan of electric handpieces. She's very happy that they've gotten smaller. They're much easier to use. She gets great access to the posterior part of the mouth, which was not the case when electric handpieces first emerged into the market. She also understands the importance of maintenancing a handpiece. And according to her, she hasn't had any problems since she's developed this standardized protocol for keeping her handpieces running perfectly. She does it despite the fact that we have turnover in the office and people tend to do things their own way. And this is done through automation. And she'll talk about how that automation is really the best way to go when it comes to taking care of her handpieces and giving it the longevity that she expects from a premium handpiece. She's also going to talk about her philosophy of practice, which is precision based on transcribing the pulp as she preps the tooth. Her priority is pulp vitality and minimum reduction of tooth structure. So I think it's going to be a really good conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Stay with us. We'll start shortly. Before we get started, I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and even better, leave a review. By doing so, you're not only showing support for what we do here, but your reviews are instrumental in getting more dental professionals to listen and benefit from our content. We really do appreciate it. Dr. Paholiuk, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I just want to let our audience know that we had a brief discussion before we went live here, and Dr. Paholiuk speaks four languages, and she's about to learn a fifth, which is Italian, and English is her fourth language, and she's a dentist. So for all of you who think that you suffered through dental school and had all these issues, I mean, that's English being a fourth language, and you teach too, right?
Yes, I do.
Where do you teach?
Yeah. I teach at USC Dental School, the same school where I graduated, actually.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And she had a whole life before dental school because she started dental school when she was 30, which is, you know, when you're 30 years old, to me, sounds like a very young person. But to the other dental students, you were the old lady in the school, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Actually, I was not the oldest one, believe it or not, but you're correct. Yeah. I was definitely older student there.
Yeah, everything is relative. Everything is relative. And as you get older, the goalposts keep moving and suddenly everyone looks younger than you remember. Yeah, that's just how it works. So it's just really very interesting to go through that voyage. All right, so, you know, we're going to be talking about some interesting stuff. For one thing, as dentists, we all care about precision. I mean, precision's a big deal for the things we do every day in our operatory. But this is especially true for you as you pride yourself on a practice that emphasizes a very conservative biomimetic style of dentistry. Essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, at all costs, you want to preserve tooth structure. That's really important to you. And to make that happen, you need precision. So with that in mind, how does handpiece performance impact your ability to preserve healthy tooth structure while achieving the precision and control that minimally invasive dentistry requires?
Yes, I do practice minimally invasive advanced adhesive dentistry based on biomimetic principles, philosophy. So it means that I do everything possible to preserve as much as I can the tooth structure and the pulp vitality. I would say majority of my patients come to see me for a second, sometimes third, fourth opinion after they hear that they need a root canal and a crown. And when the pulp is vital, no matter how severely decayed the tooth, we can still preserve the pulp vitality. So I worked on a mainly on a posterior dentition, as you can tell. mainly what I do, either severely decayed teeth that are, I'm trying to preserve the nerve, or I do a crack dissection, which on a teeth that are symptomatic due to the fracture. And if you would look at my post-operative x-rays, you would see that my preparation design is like I'm circumscribing the nerve, right? So the pulp chamber. And this kind of preparation and design, it does require a lot of precision and control.
Just to clarify, you use the word circumscribe the pulp, and that's your preparation design based on preserving it.
Correct. So handpiece performance is absolutely crucial.
So the J.V. Black concept of preparing based on retention, obviously we're out of that era right now for sure. And adhesive dentistry has allowed us to do some amazing things to protect the pulp. But I mean, as an endodontist speaking, I totally think what you're doing is great. But again, if the symptoms, even if the pulp is vital, if the symptoms are overwhelmingly pointing toward what we, call in our jargon, irreversible pulpitis,
Correct.
you're still kind of destined for that patient to get endodontic
Oh,
treatment.
absolutely. Yes. And when patients come in for, as I said, a second opinion or whatever, third opinion, that's the patient education is the first thing that I do. And I do my very best to explain them. Actually, that's my line. I'm not doing magic here. I'm practicing evidence-based. It's a science. So, if the tooth is asymptomatic and severely decayed, it doesn't mean that your nerve is vital. It means that it could be necrotic. We need to test the pulp. And I never do any restorative treatment until I verify that the pulp is actually vital. Because if it's irreversible, the root canal is needed. It's absolutely not even a discussion. So, and sometimes when I am unable to test the pulp vitality because some patients are very anxious. You rely on the
They're
patient.
going to jump no matter what you do.
Absolutely. So I refer to endodontists so they can verify that it. Because the dentist I work with, he knows the dentistry I do. So he would test for me. And in this case, I say, I'm sorry, we need to verify that that's what you need. And I do a lot of talking that root canal is not evil. That's the way to save the tooth.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you use the term pulpitis, you are, by definition, saying that the pulp is vital. So if you have a necrotic pulp, then you don't have a pulpitis. Sometimes there's partial pulpitis, and then part of the apical part of the root is necrotic. But even if it's alive and it's vital, if it's the symptoms indicate that it's too much for the patient to handle based on the duration of the response to hot and cold or whatever pressure, or not even pressure, just temperature and sweetness, then you're typically looking at an irreversible pulpitis. So let me get
Absolutely.
back to the handpiece. So what is it that the handpiece does for you? What kind of handpiece do you use? Do you use air? Do you use electric? And what are you looking for in a handpiece that could give you the control and the precision that you need to basically avoid the pulp at all costs and leave as much tooth structure as possible and rely on your adhesive dentistry.
Okay, so first of all, I do use, I actually, my practice, I had a startup. So I built my practice from the scratch. And before that, I was 4 or 5 years an associate. So I have experience with air-driven handpieces. And because I graduated USC when USC already had both electric and air-driven, so I already knew the difference. So I knew that for what I want to do, I wanted the control. So for me, it was not a question that I want electric handpiece. So I have NSK electric handpieces in my practice. And going back to dentistry, I chose electric handpieces because of the control that it gives me during my preparations.
Now, do you use that electric handpiece for everything, or
Absolutely, yes.
you don't use air driven at all?
Actually, I do have air driven slow speed.
Okay,
That's
slow
but
speed.
if for my preparations, I use pretty much all my preparations coming with a high
Now,
speed
one of
or
the things that, I heard from dentists years ago when electric handpieces were kind of being marketed and introduced to the profession were that they were kind of bulky, they were heavier. If you have a smaller hand, they're more difficult to get access to the posterior. But that's all been changed and modernized, right? I mean, the newer electric handpieces sometimes are hard to differentiate between air-driven. I mean, I'm not using it, so tell me what your thoughts are on that.
That's actually, you are so right on point with that. Remember I told you that I first experienced electric handpiece in USC? So I'm not to name the brands here. It was not an SK. And my first experience was, I started, let's say this, I was trained for second year with electric, with the air driven. So I was already used to the size of the head of the handpiece and everything. So now I heard from Dr. Pascal Magnier, was my mentor back
wow,
in the day.
Wow, that's quite a mentor.
Yes.
Yes, congratulations.
I'm very fortunate. And I was so excited to start with an electric handpiece, right? And then here I am, and I'm sitting ready to, it was still on a Typeron that was still in Seamlab, getting the electric handpiece. And I'm like, oh man, I just don't see anything. The head was so big. Forget about bulky, big on a hand. I think I would get used to this. But as a new to dentistry itself, I already don't have the hand skill yet, right? And now you put this huge obstacle in front of my vision. I'm like, you know what? Not happening.
Yeah.
So I pushed myself. I liked certain things. I know what I realized right away is the torque. So certain things I distinguished right away. Okay, I like this. I don't like this. But I couldn't force myself to work with it. Fast forward about 7 years later, when I was opening my practice, I really wanted electric handpieces. I really was looking for the best equipment to do the dentistry that I knew I wanted to practice. And I came across an ad of the very beautiful female hand, small hand, with a handpiece on it. And it was advertising for a small hand that it's not bulky, and it's at NSK. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I should try that. And whatever you're mentioning was actually right to the point, because that's how I chose what I wanted. And when 5 years ago, a little over 5 years ago, when I was test driving the electric handpieces, I actually ended up with NSK because of that, because it felt comfortable. It felt small in my hand. That was my main reason to go with this.
Yeah, the way you described that was absolutely perfect. It's amazing that English is your fourth language. I mean, I'm very impressed with your decision making in the dental part of this conversation, but I'm just, the way you're expressing yourself with English is just so very elegant and articulate. I struggle with words sometimes, and this is what I do for a living. But no, very impressed with the way you said that. So you're sold on electric. There's no doubt about it. They've overcome that obstacle that was really keeping a lot of individuals, especially women with small hands, from using it. And the benefit is huge. Now, you work under high magnification. Your magnification is what, 8.5 to 10 times in that range? So what kinds of differences become noticeable at that level of magnification when a handpiece is performing optimally versus another handpiece where you don't have that precision?
You are correct. On a daily basis, I work with 8.5 magnification loops, and I do have 10x as well. So if I would do a crack dissection, I would be using 10x. But, you know, higher magnification, more you see and more you notice. So I think what really stands out is how your preparation look at the end. If you like, your prep is the true giveaway how your handpiece performs. And that's another thing I love about electric handpieces. And I heard it actually from several doctors. I'm not gonna name them, but they're known out there, known clinicians. And we all agreed that even if you don't have the best hand skills, but having a good handpiece that give you control, it will make your preparations better because you feel that you have more control over it. So you can be more precise.
Let me ask you this. Do you use single patient use burrs when you prep your teeth?
I love one-time use bursts.
Okay, so I
For
was hoping
me,
you were going to say that. Yeah, because that, to me, that takes out a variable. If you're using a new burr on every patient, which I think dentists at this point should be doing, and I know it's
absolutely.
hard to throw out a diamond burr after you've used it one time, but in the long run, when you talk about the cost of sterilizing it and everything else, but you, as far as we're talking about precision now, you could now isolate the handpiece as the true defining instrument for making that beautiful prep possible. So I do want to touch on air driven one more time before we give that up, since you're a true and 100% diligent electric user. If one of your colleagues said, you know, I've been using air driven all my life, all my career, I used it in dental school, and I get really good preps with air driven, and I feel comfortable with the way, you know, the operatory is set up. I don't have to worry about using any additional installation equipment that would a motor or whatever else. What would you say to them? Would you know, I'm thinking, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, I would think you would suggest to them to try it to see if they could bring their preparation design to a level above what they currently think is really good. Would that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does make sense. There is several differences actually between air-driven and electric handpieces that I can talk about. But if we concentrate on a prep design, I feel like being able to control RPM with one single burr, you can cut and refine your prep. That's amazing. That's something that will improve the outcome in terms of the final preparation, but also, it's efficiency as well. I loved using several burrs when I was working as an associate for like one prep. I would use like, I don't know, like 3 to 5 burrs. And many experienced dentists were telling me, Anna, every time you take the burr in, out, like you're taking time off your prep. So it slows you down. And yes, I do believe that steel electric will give you a better outcome. But again, it's hard for me to talk because I know great clinicians who are so amazing with air driven because they're already amazing with air driven handpieces. So if it works, great. But
But it's worth trying. It's
if
certainly
it's
worth
worth
trying.
trying, absolutely, because I don't know, it just gives you this control that you don't have with electric
Now, you
handpieces.
mentioned that you change burrs a lot. Does that mean you're not changing burrs with electric as much?
No, I don't because I love that I can use the same burr as a cutting and polishing burr simply by controlling RPM. I cut the tooth at the highest RPM, right? Then I can shut down the water. I can slow down to, let's say, 40, and on a dry, just finalize the margin with the same fine cutting diamond
Right,
that
so
I
there's a
use.
whole level of efficiency that's being brought into the
Absolutely.
picture. Yeah. Now, let me ask you about this. Many dentists focus on buying high quality handpieces. They know that's the workhorse of their practice, which is a good thing because handpieces, you know, are one of those areas where the purchasing decision is based on performance, like we talked about reliability and longevity. And it's not all about price, but buying a premium handpiece is only part of the equation because what many of us don't focus on enough is maintenance. So how much does maintenance affect the long-term performance and predictability of your handpieces? What are you doing in your office for maintenance? And I also want to talk about standardizing maintenance because, you know, when you have a turnover of assistants, not every assistant is going to handle the maintenance the same way. So how do you manage the maintenance part and how important is that for your electric handpiece?
Right, so maintenance is actually crucial. Regardless of what kind of a handpiece you have, so you can buy the best handpiece on the market, but if maintenance is inconsistent, eventually you will notice changes in the performance. So proper and consistent maintenance will help to avoid expensive repairs. And I can speak about this because in past 5 years, a little over past 5 years, that in my practice, I never had even one issue with a handpiece, nothing at all. It performed beautifully, and I truly believe that maintenance played a key role in this. The key is creating a system that makes maintenance simple, time efficient, and done correctly by each team member, as you just mentioned. We've in reality, we get temporary assistance, we hire new team members. So it's important to have the standardized systems. And also, you know, different assistants, they develop different maintenance habits depending what it was in the previous office.
That's a good point, because I've talked to repair technicians, wonderful conversations with those guys. It's really funny to talk to them. But they told me, and I talked to them actually before this podcast, these are some of the things that are common among different employees that are handling maintenance. Number one, insufficient lubrication. Number two, failure to run the handpiece after lubrication, sterilizing without adequate purging, and debris remaining in the gear train. And these things lead to bearing failure, increased noise, heat generation, and essentially wear of the handpiece. So does that align with what is going on in your practice as far as your experience?
So let me share with you a little bit. Before becoming a dentist, I was for 7 years dental assistant. And I'll tell you the story from the dental
here we go. Yeah.
Perspective. When the doctor got a new handpieces, Adrian handpieces, the representative of the company came in and he just told me that what to do, right? And he was like, you put this drop of oil in this chamber, la 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 la, right? So he leaves and here I am, you know? Okay, so if you put one drop is good, so two is better, right? So all these human errors comes in with trying to do something better. Yes, you are correct. That's actually, when I was opening my practice, I wanted to create a system and avoid these inconsistencies and make it also simple. So the person who helped me installing my electric handpieces, I was actually asking him, okay, this is investment, right? So
absolutely,
it was money, right? So
right.
I was like, okay, what can I do to increase the longevity? And he said, well, what do you do with a car? Maintenance. And I will never forget this. He said, your handpiece requires maintenance as anything else in this world if you wanted to keep performing like a brand new. And that's how he introduced me to the iCare system, which is automated cleaning system, right? And he went over the protocols with me how to use it. And I love the iCare system because it automates the cleaning and lubrication process with the correct amount of oil. You know, there's no more guessing, one or two drops. And while properly rotating the internal gears for the optimal lubrication. So you don't have to think if you did something enough or not enough. All this human error is out of the picture.
I've heard a lot of dentists, from a lot of dentists who use the NSK handpiece system. They love this. They really love this.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
And my assistants love it too.
Your assistants love it, obviously.
Simple.
Yeah, well, if I was an assistant and had an office that had it, I would love it too. So tell us what the voyage is. What is the trip that electric handpiece takes? You finished a patient, you did a great prep, you move out of that operatory. What does the assistant do with that handpiece? And talk about the actual maintenance cycle. Like, how often do you have to do that eye care process where you purge it and clean it and everything else?
Okay, so actually, again, going back to the point where I was installing the handpieces, the representative of the company, he was giving me the whole protocol when, how to clean, you know, and there was a schedule given. And I was like, okay, is there any problems if I just do it every time after the procedure? And he said, absolutely no. It's like, you cannot overdo it. So that's where I knew that that's going to be my system. So, as you said, the prep is finished, assistants breaking down the room. They collect all the instruments on a tray. So as they get to the back, the eye care system, you just open the door, you connect the hand pieces, you press one button, done. As the system takes care of the hand pieces, they take care of the rest of the instruments, they do whatever they need to do. The cycle is done by that time. It's like, I don't know, maybe a minute or so. And then they have to process the chuck. It's
right.
Very important.
The chuck is a separate maintenance step.
Absolutely. So they open the door and they connect the chuck of each one. It takes a few seconds. They take care of the chuck area. Done. Your handpiece is ready to go to autoclave.
So, and then it goes into the autoclave. So the maintenance of this electric handpiece could, and doing it properly through this kind of automated system that lubricates it and purges it. It takes out staff variability. You could do multiple handpieces at the same time, right? There's room more than one. And what about the actual record keeping for this? Does it tell you when you do this so you have this in a record form?
Well, for me, I do not need any record because every time I use the handpiece, it has to go through the same process. So that's where I was trying to verify with the representative from day one. Is there like a limit
Right.
that so I don't overdo it, so to say? And no, you cannot
It's like one of the few things in
too
life.
clean.
It's one of the few things in life you can't overdo. I mean,
Overdo,
right.
yeah.
I mean,
So I
if I dry clean my suit every single time I wore it, it would eventually take its toll on the suit, you know, because there's a downside to over dry cleaning. So you want to do it when you need to, or maybe a little before you need to, and then you got your suit. But if you do it every time, you're going to wear it out. So you can't wear out your electric handpiece by putting it through this eye care system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
So
No, you
that's a
cannot.
good system to have. I mean, they just drop it in there and then it goes in the autoclave and you're all set for the next patient.
Yes, you know, and it's actually one of the there is a I don't remember exact protocol for chuck because there is something. Okay, let's assume, don't quote me on this, but let's assume it's like once a week. I just truly don't remember what I was told. But I just quickly realized I will not be able to track which handpiece, because I got like five handpieces, right? And how do you keep track of which handpiece was used like once a week, twice? I mean, it's impossible, right?
No,
So I just want to take it out of my
makes the
problem.
most sense. This makes the most sense. You know, getting back to the chuck, we all know as practicing clinicians that the key sign of a bad chuck is when that burr doesn't stay in there. And there's nothing more upsetting or aggravating or annoying than having a burr, you know, vibrating inside your handpiece.
It can be your worst enemy,
Worst
your
enemy, a
friend.
bad chuck, yes.
Yes, you're right. You know, as a associate, I feel like I experienced it all. I experienced it being stuck, and you just sit there with a patient in the back of the patient, behind the patient, like trying to take it out using like hemostat, right?
Right.
I think any of us experienced
Or
it.
you're looking for it in the patient's mouth because it came out.
Absolutely. And actually, you know, poor burr retention, I think this is like the scariest event
Right.
because it happened to me once and I was like petrified.
No, it's
Thank God.
frightening. It's like
Yes.
a small missile going down their throat. Yeah.
That
Yeah.
that's incredible. And thank God for rubber dam. You're right. But
Only
yes.
35% of dentists use rubber dam.
Well, I use rubber dam for each single procedure, even when I don't prep a tooth for the crown unless it has a crown that requires replacement, that to begin with. But if I am to replace a crown, I actually even prep, remove the crown, and everything is under the rubber
Yeah,
dam.
well,
Outside
that's
of cleaning in my
very.
office.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, you obviously have a good system for using a rubber dam. Most of the dentists in a survey, and I think Dr. Lawson was on that podcast with me where he said that I think he had a social media poll that he did. He has a lot of followers, Nate Lawson. And he said that most of the dentists that did not use the rubber dam, which is 60%, the reason was inconvenience.
Inconvenience.
Yeah, they just.
I honestly don't see how it's inconvenience. For me, it's the best thing that you can do. It pulls the tongue is not on the way, lips not on the way. You're not afraid to cut the cheek. You have beautiful. I use blue colored rubber dam, so you have this nice color that makes everything
And
stand
it's
out.
peppermint. I used to use a rubber dam that just smelled great. I don't know what it was.
No, it's a latex free. Again, not to name any companies here, but it's just. Because sometimes people don't even know if they have latex allergy. So
Right.
it's synthetic material, but it has beautiful blue color and makes everything stand out while you're working. So it's even, I use caries detector, as you can guess, for for my selective caries removal. So For me, it's every single tool that we have, it's out there for you. So there is no reason to not to have a beautiful prep and do good dentistry, in my opinion.
Yeah, do you put the rubber dam on yourself or does your staff put it on?
We actually do it together. I put the clamp, I call it the ring, in front of the patient. So I always isolate the quadrant. So I would put it on the most posterior tooth, and we isolate the quadrant. So
Wingless.
fingers, yes,
Okay, so
fingers.
because you don't want to have any conflict with your sectional matrix and your separator, your two separate and everything else, and the wedge goes in there.
I
Everything
have
fits.
many different ones, but my go-to wingless.
Wingless, yeah, that seems to be very popular. If you're relying on adhesive dentistry and you're doing the kind of biomimetic dentistry that you do in your office, where it depends solely on adhesion, the last thing you want to do is get contamination from saliva or blood, period, right? Because the patient's going to come back with a failure unless you redo it. And then if you redo it while the patient's sitting there, just about when you're ready to apply the composite, the same thing could happen. You know, the tongue could get in the way, or saliva just it's like a wave of saliva, or those patients that, as some of our guests have said, love to lick their dentistry. You know, that's just how it is.
Yes. Adhesive dentistry is chemistry. Adhesive dentistry is chemistry, and chemistry requires absolutely controlled environment. And adhesive dentistry, dry controlled environment. So rubber dam gives you exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like to me you have an incredible philosophy of practice because number one, you know, what you're doing, not even number one, but overall, you're taking variables out of the picture that could decrease the success rate of your clinical dentistry because you rely so much on precision. You've got the handpiece handled, you've got the maintenance of the handpiece handled, you don't have to worry about the chuck. A burr that's moving out of control is certainly not going to give you precision. And then you have isolation. And also, we talked about this offline, you implement a caries detection dye, if I understood you correctly.
When I do selective caries removal, I reapply multiple times caries detection dye.
Oh, you use
And
a blue dye?
actually, it's red,
All right, okay.
but there are different kinds. There is blue, green, red. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you know how to use it, because I feel like many doctors just don't understand how it works and how to use it. It's a great tool, especially for those who are trying to be conservative and to do selective caries removal. There is a need to understand what you're trying to achieve. You're not removing everything that is stained. You need to create a peripheral seal zone, what we call it. It's like you need about 2-3 millimeter of the clean enamel, superficial dentin, and DEJ. That's what you're trying to do. And of course, you want to remove as much of the diseased, infected, affected dentin as possible. Remember, I told you, if you look on my postoperative x-rays, you will see that I'm circumscribing the pulp, because I mean, those who practice biomimetic dentistry, we have what we call a 3x5 rule. It's where we know where the anatomical average, where the nerve lives, right? 3 millimeter from the measuring from the contact of adjacent tooth, and 5 millimeters measuring from occlusal surface of the tooth you're working on, right? So this 3x5 rule applied, you need to make sure that this band of what we call peripheral seal zone is absolutely free of infected and affected dentin.
Do you ever use SDF, silver diamine fluoride?
I do not, but I believe that, and I cannot, you know, I read a lot of literature and science, and I rely heavily on following up with the science research that comes out. But I cannot even comment on this, because SDF is used mainly in pediatric
Right, that's
offices.
right, that's true. But it is very effective against affected dentin. So when you have that typical leathery dentin that we're taught to peel off in dental school, just keep scraping that stuff off. You actually want to leave that there. And you just want to remove the mush, which is the infected dentin. You can even do that with a bender brush, you know, something like that. You don't even need a drill, even though we're talking about handpieces here. But for certain cases, especially, younger people, like you said, you could leave the affected dentin, which is the leathery dentin, and then put the silver diamond fluoride on, which is just a drop or so, and then go straight ahead with glass ionomer. And that SDF will stop the progression of the decay and actually remineralize the leathery dentin. And with the combination of the glass ionomer on top, it becomes a very solid restoration that could last a very long time. And that's about as conservative as you can be. But I'm not saying that applies to patients that you're talking about, because every single case is different. But it's certainly good for kiddos that come in that may not be coming back to the dentist again. So they could buy, you can get years out of this stuff. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I strongly do believe in this. And I do have friends who are pediatric dentists and who use it heavily because they want to be also conservative and, you know, to minimize.
Right. And the patients that are very fearful, if they don't want to get an injection, you can actually treat a carious lesion just by using a hand instrument, SDF, and put glass ionomer over it. But, you know, we got off topic a little bit, but you covered some incredible clinical pearls. And I think what you're doing in your office is so admirable, Dr. Paholiak, because every single patient that goes to the dentist would love to have a dentist like you who cares about preserving tooth structure. I mean, the aggressive dentistry where you just cut teeth down and you restore, and everything is based on restoration through crowns and onlays and veneers. All that stuff is still necessary, but we do have the tools today to be very conservative, and you're taking advantage of that because you believe in it. That's the way you want to practice, which is extremely admirable. And I'm really happy to have someone like you on the show, because I would love many of our listeners to think about it when it comes time to navigating around the pulp and doing the things that you're doing. So is there a way for people to reach out to you if they have any questions, or do you have a website?
Well, there's a website for my practice, but if somebody have questions, they can absolutely email me. And I'm not sure how I can share the email.
Well, you can say it now, and then we'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. So it's going to be complicated because it's A and my last name. So it's apaholiok@gmail.com.
Okay. So I'll do it one more time. So it's apaholiok@gmail.com. So please send Dr. Paholiak an email if you have any questions. And if you want to learn more about eye care or any of the NSK products, feel free to visit their website. Great discussion, Dr. Paholiak. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.